today, how a wave of coronavirus infections from one hotel put an entire Australian state into a six-week lockdown. At the beginning of May, the Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, announced that with fewer than 100 deaths from coronavirus across the country, it was time to ease restrictions.
We need to restart our economy. We need to restart our society. We can't keep Australia under the doona. We need to be able to move ahead.
But this week, Australia recorded its deadliest day since the pandemic began. In response to a spike in cases, the southeastern state of Victoria has been put on a strict lockdown, with millions of people, including The Guardian's Melbourne bureau chief, Melissa Davey, facing weeks living under tough new rules.
I can't stress enough how different this second wave is to the first time around. When you have returning travellers with the virus, they're such an easy group to identify. You get them at the airport, you put them in a hotel, you can test them, you see them when they develop symptoms, right? But once you have this spread throughout the community, this silent spread, how do you pinpoint those cases and those clusters? How do you know where it began? It becomes really, really, really difficult, and that's how it got out of control here.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, Australia's second fight against COVID-19. Melissa, when coronavirus first began spreading around the world in February and March, how did Australia respond? Was it taken very seriously?
I think as we saw what was happening around the world, we knew it was serious, but I think there was definitely a sense that we weren't as touched by it yet. So if you think back to around the middle of March, Australians were still commuting, going to work, socialising at restaurants and bars. Australia was kind of gradually shutting down, but there was a sense of, oh, well, it's not really that serious yet. And then all of a sudden, towards the end of March, it began to feel much more real.
In a bid to restrict the spread of coronavirus, Tasmania's Premier has announced this morning one of the toughest border control measures in the country.
So first, Tasmania closed its borders. Australians from overseas rushed home. When people did return to Australia from overseas, they were automatically put into hotel quarantine. And we were told that these measures could last about 6 months. But by early May, we were talking about reopening again in Australia.
Davina, Bondi is officially back in business, and you'll have to pardon the pun, but things here seem to be going swimmingly. The famous.
And it seemed like we had this under control. It was awful watching what was happening around the world, but Australia was doing really well, and we didn't even have as stringent lockdowns as somewhere like New Zealand. It seemed like that we were going to return to normal pretty quickly.
Looking back on that time, were Australians quite receptive to these changes, and were they happy to follow the rules?
I think that it was a very cohesive response, right? Because we were all effectively shutting down at the same time. Social distancing measures were announced for all of Australia at the same time. There was a lot of unity, and children were drawing pictures on footpaths, like rainbows, and it was all very much, we'll get through this. Obviously, there were some deaths and a lot of sadness around that. But overall, there was a feeling of optimism and hope.
And how were the government doing at this time? Were they managing to get through to people?
When this was all new and new announcements were being made, there was scepticism of the government and a feeling that it wasn't communicated well. And the advertising campaigns around the messages were a bit naff. Like, they put out these kind of cheesy graphics and explainers about the new rules, and it was all a bit silly.
If someone's sick, touch your face or use the toilet. Remember to cough or sneeze into your arm or a tissue.
Then the government really got its act together, it got its messaging together. The Prime Minister would come out every day with a much more clearer message. It ultimately did work. We had very low numbers in Australia. We managed to contain it, even in New South Wales, where there were some issues with aged care. Again, ultimately that was under control.
Australia has seen comparable success in battling the virus.
When did lockdown restrictions lift? When do people start getting back to some sort of normality?
Even though most of Australia was starting to open up again and feeling like we were on top of this virus, different borders opened up at different times. If you look at Western Australia, from very early on, the Premier of Western Australia said, you know what? Western Australia is now an island within an island.
The Premier today announcing a hard border closure that he says will keep almost all visitors out of our state.
We're shutting our borders. We're not letting you in. Now, I'm from Western Australia. I have no family in Victoria. I haven't seen my family for a year now. I applied for an exemption to get into Western Australia because my dad has some cognitive decline, some dementia issues. He was getting a bit worse. And a week ago, I was knocked back. So that wasn't enough. To get into Western Australia at the moment, you really do need to have very exceptional, special circumstances. My family living in WA, they're living life as normal, pretty much. I mean, they're able to go to the gym, they go to the beach, they are at work. And I don't think they can even fully fathom what I'm going through here.
Okay, so the country seemed to have avoided the awful number of deaths and infections endured by so many others. But when did things begin to change? Where did we start to see cases emerging?
I think by the end of June, it was clear something pretty different was going on in Victoria. When 75 new cases were announced on the 29th, that was one of the largest overnight jumps for the state since the pandemic began, and that's when the tone really started to change.
Good morning. We have dramatic developments from Melbourne this morning. 75 people have tested positive to coronavirus in the past 24 hours alone.
People began trying to identify a source of blame for this rise in infection, because what was also clear is that most of those cases, or many of those cases, were not from returned travellers. And that was really glaring. So if they're not cases in returned travellers from overseas, well, where are they coming from? Eventually, it came out that what really caused this second wave was a breach in the state government's hotel quarantine program. That's what happened. That's where it leaked from.
And what was that quarantine program? How was it working and what went wrong?
So this was a program occurring all around Australia.
As we go to air, thousands of Australian travellers are preparing to spend their first night in enforced hotel quarantine.
And international travellers would arrive back to Australia from overseas, and they would get taken straight from the airport to these specific hotels in each state and territory. And they would have to stay there for 14 days.
This is our hotel room, the lovely view, with the police on guard.
They would be tested if they developed symptoms, and that was a way of containing the virus, making sure that cases were identified and didn't spread into the community. But while most states and territories got police officers and Australian Defence Force personnel to monitor these hotels, Victoria took a different approach. We didn't use police and we didn't use defence staff. We used security contractors. So, you know, these are the bouncers or security staff you might see outside of nightclubs, for example.
How much training did you get?
5 minutes, yeah. Horrendous, to tell you the truth.
What came out is that they didn't necessarily receive great training in infection control, and they were mingling with the returned travellers. They were socialising with them.
Coronavirus can be traced back to breaches in these hotels, and there are reports today that security guards slept with guests that were ordered to stay inside these
hotels. The security guards then got the virus, and before it was detected in those staff, they went home. They went out to the community. They left their workplaces for the day. They went and did shopping, and that is a lot of opportunity for this highly infectious virus to spread.
On what date in March or April were you advised that there were serious issues with the hotel security program?
I will provide her with a written answer in accordance with the standing...
There's now an inquiry into the hotel quarantine program.
Will you release the report today and stop the cover-up?
I will be providing her with a written response to her question by tomorrow.
It's an absolute pantomime with the minister in here today, and she's just holding the Victorian people with absolute contempt.
God, so a very awkward series of events that have had very serious consequences. As you say, these people were carrying the virus back into the community. How do we see it spreading out from these hotels?
First, it got into households, it seems. So people went back to their families or they visited family members. And often these were families where you have lots of people living under the same roof. It also got into aged care. And we know that once it gets into aged care, where you've got a lot of highly vulnerable people. It's just a disaster.
When did the authorities in Victoria realise what was happening and how did they respond?
The authorities probably knew that something concerning was going on around June, but it was in July when we had what was called hotspot suburbs. It was pretty clear that the virus was spreading in certain areas more than others, and 36 suburbs were placed back into lockdown by the state government. And people in those suburbs were told, you're only allowed to leave your home for exercise, for healthcare, work and study.
What can we do? It has to happen in order for it not to spread. Yeah, I only live two streets away from being in 3056, so it's a little bit annoying and very unlucky for me.
It's a bit sad. They were happy. We're all happy to be out, like everyone in Victoria, and so it's hard to be back in.
Well, of course, I'm not happy about it. I mean, it means that we sort of feels like we're back to square one, really.
And this was very different this time around, right? Because you have some of the states still being able to gradually open up again, but then you've got these suburbs that are back in lockdown, and it kind of puts suburb against suburb. You know, you'd hear people saying, oh, I'm surrounded by hotspot suburbs. It's only a matter of time before it gets into mine, and kind of being angry at being surrounded by these virus suburbs. And there was a bit of resentment.
It's kind of like an inverted keeping up with the Joneses, you know, oh, I don't want to be a hotspot suburb.
It really felt like that. And I mean, I have to say my suburb was one of these hotspot suburbs.
So you were just starting to get back to normal life to some degree, and then you had to go back into lockdown.
Yep. And you know, there was a lot of pity from people who I know who weren't in one of the hotspot suburbs. But very quickly, much of the rest of Victoria also was thrown into lockdown as well. So initially, these hotspot suburbs were told that it's just you guys. But then it was clear the virus kept spreading, and all of metropolitan Melbourne were also put back into the same lockdown. But then on the 2nd of August, things escalated again.
Stage four is here, our COVID hell far from over.
From 6 p.m. tonight, I am declaring a state of disaster.
The Premier of Victoria, Daniel Andrews, announced new restrictions on the 2nd. What were they? What had changed?
It was quite dramatic and shocking because the government announced a curfew.
From 8 p.m. tonight, a curfew will be implemented. So there will be a curfew across metropolitan Melbourne from...
We've never had a curfew before in Australia. And suddenly Victorians were told that from 8 p.m. until 5 a.m. we'd have to stay at home. We weren't allowed to leave home even for exercise, except for urgent medical care. And then we were also told that exercise would be restricted. So now we can only go outside for exercise for 1 hour a day. It was much more severe. In the previous shutdown, people could still, for example, go to hardware stores or they could go to some retail stores. As of the 6th of August, most retail stores will be closed. Most businesses will be closed. Most people will work from home. Already, entire streetscapes have changed. So every time I go out, there are more for lease signs or auction signs on businesses. I don't think it's quite sunk in yet just what the impact of that is going to be.
I mean, these are very strict rules being imposed on people like yourself who've been in a constant lockdown for weeks. What was the initial response from people in Victoria to that announcement on the 2nd?
I think it's really mixed. So I think a lot of people were surprised just at how quickly it seemed to escalate and how strong the restrictions were. But also, I think there is a lot of support for the government in many ways. People are scared and they just want this virus to go away, and they're quite happy to do whatever it takes. The curfew, I mean, it's obviously difficult for many people, but people seem generally supportive of it. The other interesting thing that's happened is that really tough policing measures have been introduced since this extraordinary lockdown was announced. So police in Victoria have been given extraordinary powers to enforce limitations on people's movement. Individuals can be given on-the-spot fines of up to $5,000. And if you know that you've got COVID-19 and that you have to then stay at home, people have been told that they can expect multiple door knocks, maybe every day, to check that they're home from police and from the Defence Force. And if they're not home, they'll be fined. It's extraordinary.
The message is very clear. You will be door knocked, you will be visited. If you're not at home, then you will be fined. And for particularly selfish behaviour, the opportunity to take you to court, where the maximum penalty is in fact $20,000.
What we do know for sure is that it wasn't necessarily most of Victoria acting selfishly that did this. It was infection control breaches in the hotel quarantine program. The government decided to employ those security staff rather than police or Defence Force staff. We know that this virus got into aged care because of workforce that works across multiple facilities who often doesn't have access to sick leave. To start blaming individuals alone and to run this narrative that individuals are doing the wrong thing, we need more police, we need fines, it just risks not telling the full story. And that is what I'm concerned about and many others are concerned about.
You say people are receptive to these tough new rules. Are they complying with the restrictions?
Most people are, but what the government is doing is releasing a list every day of the number of fines issued and the reasons for those fines. And so there are definitely people doing the wrong thing and engaging in really appalling, horrific behaviour, like assaulting police officers.
Her head was smashed repeatedly onto the concrete footpath and a clump of hair ripped from her skull, all because this junior police officer asked a woman why she wasn't wearing a mask.
But it's much harder to get data around how many healthcare workers have been infected and in what hospitals. The concern is that those examples have been held up and given a lot of space, and it can almost make it seem like these individuals are the reason why this virus is out of control.
Three or four occasions in the past week, we've had to smash the windows of people in cars and pull them out of there so they could provide their details.
When governments are in strife, they tend to revert to law and order approaches. It's something that happens around the world, certainly something that happens in Australia, and I think that's what we're seeing now in Victoria, that the government is under pressure here. Long term, whether or not that works for them and whether or not people support that, it remains to be seen.
Coming up, what impact could another 5 weeks of lockdown have on people living in Victoria? Melissa, this lockdown now is going to take you into mid-September. It's winter in Melbourne. How are people going to cope spending the next 5 weeks inside?
Well, I was looking into this, and there's a service here called Kids Helpline. It's this free charity service for children around Australia to call for counselling. And they said in July they had an 8% increase in calls from children in Victoria compared to the month before. People are about to lose their jobs. We have people now with children at home on top of this. So maybe carers have lost their jobs. They've got children at home that they're trying to homeschool. There's no end in sight. There's no even guessing when people can travel into state again to visit loved ones, let alone within the state to visit loved ones. So there is a lot of concern about the psychological toll that this will take.
And what about the health service? How do health workers feel about this? Are they prepared?
A large number of healthcare workers have been infected with the virus this time around. So they're taken out of the workforce. We also know a couple of doctors are in intensive care. So we have hundreds of health workers in Victoria at the moment who are just at home isolating. That puts enormous pressure on the system. And how are healthcare workers getting the infections? So the government keeps saying, well, most healthcare workers are getting it in the community. They're not getting it in the workplace. I mean, what number, what percentage? And as for those people who are getting infected in the workplace, how are they getting it in the workplace? Is it that the PPE is not right? Like, you need to know these things in order to put measures in place to stop that infection, right? So yes, there's absolutely a mentality among healthcare workers that this is our jobs, this is what we're trained to do. But there is also now this increasing frustration that there's not transparency from government, and that's really, really concerning.
Some areas of Victoria are on a stage 4 lockdown, but are people worried that the government could impose even stricter rules on the state?
When the government announced stage 4, there was this line at the end of their press release saying that if we don't do this, if we don't adhere to stage 4, then there's the risk of stage 5. And the Premier was asked, well, what does that mean? What does stage 5 mean? But they didn't really have answers, because the reality is we just don't know how this will play out. And until you do, you can't start thinking about, well, what will stage five look like? But I feel like it was flagged as more of a warning, as though to say, do the right thing or restrictions will be tougher.
We talked earlier about the mood amongst Australians during the first lockdown, the clapping, rainbows on the street. Does it feel different this time around?
I mean, I haven't seen any rainbows and chalk on the street this time around. I haven't really felt that sense of we're all in it together and hope, because there are so many deaths reported each day compared to the rest of the country. So there's sadness every day. You just think of what those families must be going through. We have had our youngest death in Australia as a result of this second wave. A man in his 30s died. Even if people are still working, chances are they're affected by it because they know someone who has lost a loved one, or they have someone close to them who has lost a job. If you go down the street now, like, I often see police. There are police cars everywhere. When I go for a run at night, there is still that feeling that we're lucky compared to much of the world. But there's so much sadness now about what people are losing.
Melissa, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That was Melissa Davey. Read her latest coverage of the outbreak in Victoria at theguardian.com, where you can also hear her on Guardian Australia's brilliant podcast, Full Story. They've made lots of episodes about how the country has been affected by COVID-19, and I really recommend you take a listen. Thank you to Melissa and to Miles Martignoni for all his work on today's episode. It was produced by Serena Barker-Singh, and sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. Executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back with you tomorrow.